From Georgia Public Broadcasting, this is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott. Well, 2018 has been called the year of the woman, and the midterm election is delivering on that name. More than 100 women are newly elected to Congress, which is a new record. It's also a reason that Democrats will be taking control of the U.S. House. 98 women have been elected to that chamber, most of them Democrats. And the results have come as women increasingly have spoken out against sexual harassment and discrimination. But this is not the first year of the woman. 1992 earned the same name after Anita Hill spoke up about sexual harassment. The UN called 1975 the International Women's Year. So will this year of the woman create lasting change? It makes future feminist waves moot. Well, Sherry Randolph is here to help us answer that. She teaches history at Georgia Tech. Sherry, thanks so much for being with us.
Yeah, well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
And also Don Bennett Alexander teaches employment law at UGA. Don, thank you for being here.
You are so welcome. Thank you, Virginia.
Now, there's been a lot of slicing and dicing and analysis of the races, so we're going to focus a little bit differently on women's leadership and style. And, well, first of all, we've been here before this year of the woman. How is this year any different, Sherry?
Yeah, I think it's both and. So it's a continuation of kind of a backlash to something that usually happens. There's some repression in this past 2 years. There's been Donald Trump repression, and then wide-scale organizing as a result. Both politically, we're seeing the election of women not just in Senate and Congress, but also you see the election of many, especially in Texas, some court judges are women and a diversity of races. So that's been really exciting. And we saw that, of course, in 75 and then in 92.
Research has shown that people, for women, consciously or subconsciously considered less worthy of power. Mm. And they show women's voices considered less authoritative, women considered inherently worse at some professions. So with so much discrimination, is our culture ready for a year of the woman?
I think probably the last election, 2016, was a really good example of the answer of that being no. it really was a rejection of what was admittedly one of the most qualified women, people who had ever run for president in the history of the presidency. Mm. And research will show you that women tend to concentrate on things like being qualified and the things they have to do in order to meet that. And the truth is, that's not always what the acceptable thing is that people are used to, because they are going up against that narrative of the things that you mentioned, Virginia.
So
that
there's
is still
a gulf.
There. Every day, that's still there.
And I think if we break that down intersectionally, we know that Black women
absolutely
vote partisan. They vote for their interests most consistently since they had the right to vote. Where we don't necessarily see that with white women, and even in the election of Stacey Abrams. So we know that white women, even if they were against him, thought he was racist, sexist, so forth, Kavanaugh, all of it, they still voted in Georgia's almost 70% for Kemp. So, you know, with the year of the woman, we also see women kind of breaking down differently in how they support issues that are important to them.
Well, I think that may be part of the problem, is looking at women as a monolith, especially there's a long simmering divides between the women's movement among women of color and white women, certainly. But, you know, in order to form a movement, how do you reckon that there are different needs, political priorities when you are creating a movement? Or is this a movement? Is it just an expression of people saying, women are capable of power too?
Go ahead, John.
I was just going to say, I think that one of the big things that we are just now probably finally realizing is that when you have a movement like that, one of the things that makes it successful is understanding from the beginning that all of us see through our own lens.
Yeah.
And if you've got around a table a group of white women, they, even though they have diverse experiences, they are going to still be going through the world a certain way with certain kinds of experiences that are common to them that are not common to Black women or other women of color. Including those people from the beginning makes for a much broader appeal And Black women tend to stay away, as most women would, most people would, from something that does not seem to include them. One of the lessons, I think, and I think they build on each other over the years, but one of the lessons, I think, from the more recent events has been that you really have to have all the voices at the table if you want all of those voices to show up for you in the end.
Well, let's hear just a little comment. This is from Senator Elizabeth Warren speaking last night about the Year of the Woman.
So tonight is a night to celebrate how far our movement has come. But it is also a night to remember just how it began. And let's make sure that nobody rewrites history. This resistance began with women, and it is being led by women tonight.
So she's talking about a movement. Of course, this is this month, or last month rather, the anniversary of the Me Too movement becoming popularized. Millions of people claimed it all over the world. It's actually a movement created more than 10 years ago by a woman named Tarana Burke. Mm-hmm. But let's look at this idea of the kind of movement. You know, you teach, Dawn, you teach employment law, which covers sexual harassment. What has this movement done to help us understand about the power of women's stories and coming forward with them?
I think probably the thing that it's done most, in my estimation, is it's added bulk and a sort of resonance to their narratives and made them understand how important they were. When this happened before, and I never expected us to be here 27 years later, but when it happened before with Anita Hill, there were repercussions of it that did not surface until afterwards. Women watched as she was sat in the confirmation hearings being castigated for her truth, her narrative. And it wasn't until after that happened that they declared the Year of the Woman, because so many people who realized what she was going through rose up and started running for office. But the talk around it, I think, was quite different than it was this time. And the reverberations were really sort of interesting. My course, and I wrote the first and leading, still leading, textbook in employment law for business. It came out of Anita Hill. It was dedicated to her because nobody would listen to me saying, you know, you really need to listen to this sleeping giant called sexual harassment because it's going to rise up at some point and bite you. And publishers didn't want to deal with a book that there was no market for. And as it turns out, after what happened with Anita Hill, I had competing contracts on my desk because they all wanted a very strong chapter. They wanted the book and they wanted a very strong chapter on it. That, you would think, would have sort of raised it to a certain height that would make it so people now understood the issue. There was certain resource for them to use. They could learn it in school and take it into the workplace. As it turned out, not so much, because we are also dealing with the narrative of the men who grew up acculturated a certain way that tells them that this sort of thing is okay to do or to not even recognize it when it's happening. 20 years later, we're seeing the implications of that, where for decades this has been going on. And finally, when Me Too came along, even though, as you said, it came along with Tarana Burke in 2006.
But really caught on in the
last it years. Really caught on. And people's stories seem to be the most important part of it. Those stories, because I think they were so personal and there were so many of them, ended up resonating with people in a very different way.
Well, you mentioned that this has been so long in coming, 1991, the Anita Hill hearings. Mm-hmm. But you know, also, I feel like I'm a Gen X woman, and I think I saw those hearings and I thought, oh, okay, well, you know, a woman standing up for herself against harassment or discrimination, guess nothing much happens. You just figure out how to work through the system. But now a younger generation of women saying, no, I'm not willing to do that. I mean, is this generational, do you think, Sherry, in some ways?
Well, I always say, you know, history is ebbs and flows. It's not straight upwards motion. And so we see a quote unquote Me Too movement, the personal is political, if you will, that phrase that comes out of the 50s and 60s. Feminists borrowed that from actually the civil rights movement. when people would tell their stories in the civil rights movement and telling their stories of being discriminated against, being raped and so forth, became the impetus for many civil rights battles. And so you saw that in the 30s. You see it now. We know so much more about Rosa Parks and standing up against discrimination and fighting against discrimination. Verese Taylor and a brilliant book by Daniel McGuire talks about rape as really the catalyst for the civil rights movement and Black women speaking up about that. So I don't think this is new to the train, women speaking up. I think we're seeing the ebb and flow of that wave of it's hidden in plain sight, and now everyone's kind of caught the media attention. And I think one of the reasons also is social media, because we wouldn't probably know about, I always knew about Tarana Burke because she lives in New York, and I knew of her work and so forth, and we share many of the same friends and run in the same circles. But it was social media and Black Twitter and Black social media that was like, no, there was a Black woman who came up with this hashtag first and enforced that issue, and she probably would have been forgotten, and we see that. And we see that in so many historical moments. So I think this moment is important because, as a historian, I think it's important to label a moment. And we are seeing these kind of magnificent changes. Also in people being registered to vote, voters that have been forgotten, younger voters, people, women of color, Muslim women, Native American women. You know, there's a lot of firsts. And that's a little bit crazy. I think the first Native American woman.
Right. First African American woman in Massachusetts.
That's,
I mean,
right.
A lot of firsts.
First openly gay. You know, and it seems crazy, but that's also a brilliant part of this generation that's helping to form these intersectional movements. And
a little update that on that too. That's Sherry Randolph. She's from Georgia Tech. Don Bennett Alexander from the University of Georgia, also with me. We just got a notice that the Stacey Abrams campaign was going to hold an election update press call at 10 o'clock this morning. Also, let's see, with 100%. Reporting, Lucy McBath has a 50.3% of the votes in Georgia's 6th Congressional District, 2,000-vote lead over Karen Handel, according to the AP. Mm-hmm. So a lot to unfold here as we're watching, you know, whether, you know, certainly the Year of the Woman has borne out in congressional races, but what does it mean in a larger sense? And I guess that's a big question. The Me Too movement also affected the way we think about power, gender dynamics. Mm-hmm. Monica Lewinsky said in Vanity Fair that the movement made her rethink what happened between former President Bill Clinton and she. Here's Clinton with the Today Show's Craig Melvin.
I apologize to everybody in the world.
But you didn't apologize to her.
I have not talked to her.
Do you feel like you owe her an apology?
No, I do not. I have never talked to her. But I did say publicly on more than one occasion that I was sorry.
Well, so sorry to the American people, I guess. This is the big question, you know, that how politically people have aligned against the man in power. I think a lot of women now regret lining up behind Clinton. Yeah. Do you think that's true?
I would hope some people regret that or have a more nuanced way to understand power. So it's just not about the individuals. It's about a system that allows us to demonize the woman. So when he says he apologized to the people, he also means he apologized to his wife, do you know, or he apologized to his daughter, you know, and that she's insignificant, or any abuse of power is insignificant in the face of everything that happened to him. And so understanding why we think that way is the same kind of conversation that was happening with Kavanaugh.
Right.
Do you know, where people are outraged, they thought he did it, you know, all, you know. I mean, you have the perfect, you know, you have the perfect witness coming against him. So you don't find many people saying, no, she's not credible, because we do that with quote unquote, rape victims and so forth. But I think what's so key with that is that in this moment, you're actually seeing people using their public voices to also change policy. So to elect women who share the policies that they hope to see, and to also as a pushback against Trump. I think that's very clear. And we see that throughout history, and we're seeing it in this moment. So hopefully it'll be effective. So
I think probably both a pushback against him as well as a support for him. Because if you think about it, the districts, or I should say the states, in which there was Democratic resistance in Congress for the Kavanaugh hearings, where they said, you know, we don't like your candidate, we don't want to vote for him, those people got voted out.
Yeah.
And it's really bizarre when you think about the enormous kind of movement there was in the diverse candidates that ended up winning. The ones that you talked about, Sherry, in terms of the first gay governor, the two Native American women, the two Muslim women.
Yeah.
That against a Senate that, and those women gaining 31 seats to join the other 96 that are already there. And then on the other hand, in the Senate, people voting out the people who were against Kavanaugh.
Yeah.
So the idea of even having, you know, sort of this year of the woman, I think in some ways that's true. But like you said, it's quite nuanced, and all women are not a monolith, as you mentioned, Virginia. And we have women who absolutely voted to continue Trump's legacy.
Yeah.
One of the things I think is really incredible about this great big movement that tends to happen with women's issues is that it tends to be on the back of something sexual.
Yeah.
That is just sort of bizarre. We can't be recognized for who we are and what we bring to the table. And what we bring to the table is tremendous because we cover all issues, not just business issues, not just issues of war. We want the well-being of everyone. And that is not why we end up at the table. We end up at the table because somebody starts to, you know, react to something that happened sexually to us. And like you said, even Sherry, with the civil rights movement,
that sort of
being the basis for that whole movement, the rape of black women, that ends up telling us something about whether we really are dealing with equality or a sort of forced reckoning of this place that we come to that has built little by little over the years.
Mm.
And you know, then the question becomes, do we really care as long as we're sitting at the table?
Well,
and
but
I'm so sorry that I got to, you know, the year of the woman's rolling on apparently, but we have to stop our conversation with Sherry Randolph, Associate Professor of History at Georgia Tech. Thank you.
Thank you.
Dawn Bennett, Alexander, Associate Professor of Employment Law and Legal Studies. She's at UGA's Terry College of Business. You know, clearly we have a lot more in this conversation, and that is our show for today. Thanks so much for tuning into On Second Thought, and please stay with GPB all day and GPB online to keep abreast of what's going on in this race.